This is MSO News Sports, and we are joined by Milton head football coach Steve Dembowski, Super Bowl winner just last week. And Steve, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Well, Steve, we sent three teams from the North Shore for Super Bowls and came up with an 0-3, but obviously just a great honor to be there and compete. St. John's Prep, Salem, and Amesbury from the North Shore. But for Milton, it was the first Super Bowl ever for Milton. And, of course, you're a former coach and player at Swampscott High School. We'll have a note or two on that on the website here. But, Steve, just some reaction to winning Milton's first Super Bowl.
Well, it was... You know, 9 years in the making. We've done so much to build the program since I got here, and we were, you know, undefeated and at the doorstep last year and didn't play well at Gillette and lost by, I think, six to a great Wakefield team. And, you know, this year we had some players, but we had to replace a lot of the offense, especially all the offensive skill was gone. And we had some pieces of our defense, which, you know, kind of carried us early. We play a competitive schedule, and then to get, you know, we had a mid-season slump, and then we got hot in the tournament. Laid an egg on Thanksgiving emotionally, and, you know, and then to fall behind 14-0, and then all of a sudden the light went on, and the game plan really, really kicked in, and the kids played fantastic. So it's an amazing accomplishment when you can bring something like this back to your community, and it was kind of unexpected this year, which makes it even sweeter.
Yeah, and what's interesting too about all of this, first of all, you mentioned being down 14 points, but and then of course the Super Bowl win 42-21, but you lost to them during the regular season 42-23, almost like identical reverse scores. So tell us about the difference in these two games.
Well, I think, you know, their quarterback, Noah McKenzie, is a great player, and they have several weapons on offense. They have a fast scat back in Logan Keys, and they have Jamel, who I can't even, you know, he's got one of these, Khalik or something, and Kamari Hughes. They have these two big, strong, athletic receivers. And the four of those guys just torched us. They had Walpole had a fantastic game plan the first time we played them. They jumped out 14-0. We kind of got back in the game, but had to settle on one drive for a field goal, and we could never catch up. And, you know, in the fourth quarter, we had chances, and we turned it over, and they just pulled away, and it was like. I wouldn't say it was a stunning defeat, but the way that, you know, we gave up 35 points on defense that night, and it was just ugly the way we played, and it was kind of a point in the season we just needed to rally and figure out who we were going to be down the stretch, and it took us a few games to do that.
Steve, I want to just at least ask you one question on your team, the players and so on, because I want you to be able to share a little bit of that with our listeners. But what are the strengths of Milton football this year, player-wise, offense, defense, special teams? What names could you pull out of the roster for us?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say really the strength of our team was the amount of players that contributed. I wouldn't say we have any true superstars. We had a lot of good skill players. We had some senior linemen that we had three starters back on offense. They were all linemen. They were important. Some of our other senior linemen stepped up and filled those other spots. You know, the most, you know, noticeable, you know, of those three is Anderson Perez, who plays on the line. He's like our 300-pound guard, and Josh Riccardi was another guy, and then the development and improvement of Patrick Miller, our quarterback, who threw for over 2,500 yards and a school record 33 touchdowns. And then we had a good group of receivers coming in. They just didn't have a lot of experience, and the kid who really excelled, because we were very run RPO based for a lot of our season. You know, we still had our drop back concepts that we used, but we felt good about. We had three senior running backs that had some experience. Nathan Huey, who really started in the Super Bowl, number 7. And then Luke Hartford was kind of our lead back early, number 6. He scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl. A.J. Ciceroni, who didn't carry in the Super Bowl but had an interception, was our third back. And Ronan Salmon, who caught 2 touchdowns in the Super Bowl, is a sophomore who kind of stepped in, and he ended up catching over 1,000 yards worth of passes and 14 touchdowns. And so he was kind of our lead receiver. But we had, you know, the other guys. You saw Harrison Hinkle, who had a touchdown on offense and a pick 6 on defense. You know, our secondary was kind of a strength. Ferris Collins, number 28, who played a lot of free safety in the deep middle third in the game, is going to Bowdoin. You know, Ben Caledonia, our outside linebacker, number 9, is another captain that, you know, 2-year starter for us out there. And Ben Parmalee, a junior, who was kind of like our open field outside linebacker on the weak side. You know, he had a sack fumble caused that Caledonia recovered. You know, he had a knockdown. And, you know, it was just a team. It was a team full of guys. I compare them very much to my 07 team at Swampscott, where we played great defense in the games we won. And we were very strong on special teams. You saw our kicker, Aiden Rowley, hit all 6 of his extra points. He had a great year for us. He hit 6 or 7 field goals through the course of the season as well. We had production in all 3 areas, and I think when you can do that, it makes you a dangerous team in a tournament because you can find different ways to win. And we won high scoring games. We beat a very good Needham team 10-9 in a game where we were on defense for like 70 plays. And it was just it was a nice mix of kids who bought into their roles, and they weren't afraid to, you know, to keep working and getting better. And you know, some of the kids who helped us win the Super Bowl, like Andrew Miskell and Mark Michelski, weren't even starters at the beginning of the year. And those 2 kids came in at inside linebacker and right tackle and made us better. And so it was really a team built upon the strength and kind of the standard that we'd established here at Milton. And, you know, it's a credit to the community. You know, we've merged 2 youth teams, 2 youth programs into 1 since I got here. And, you know, we have a, you know, tremendous support from the parents who are now forming a parade on Sunday. you know, they're over the moon, and it's been a great experience.
Steve, you mentioned the 07 team in Swampscott that you coached to a Super Bowl title. So you're kind of in rare company winning Super Bowls at 2 different schools, Milton now, earlier at Swampscott. Can you share a memory or two, or how is it different, the 2 Super Bowls different or the same, or a note from the 07 Swampscott Super Bowl win?
Well, that team was, you know, we had Ilya Levin and Kyle Shonio pounding the ball behind a great offensive line led by Brian Palangi, who went on to play at Northeastern and Northern Iowa. Dorsey DeBias was, another two-way lineman on that team that started as a water boy in the 4th grade and ended up leaving as a Super Bowl champion and a captain. Peter Kinchley was the brains that ran the organization. God, we had Steve Moran and Trevor Wheeler, who went on to have good college careers, John Poth, who played at Stone. I mean, great kids, academically sound, and we had a great defense that year. You know, we won that Super Bowl, I think, 22-6. And after we scored 2 touchdowns early, there was never a doubt that you know, we were going to give up points. We had kids that ran sideline to sideline, and you know, that was just, it was special for me, obviously, being a player that was so close to getting to the postseason in 1988, and to do it in my hometown, you know, that was really emotional. You know, for me this year, it was an up and down season. You know, I had some, you know, personal challenges. My wife was injured in a freak gallstone procedure, and I missed time from practice, and she hadn't been able to go to any games until the Super Bowl. She's still recovering, and you know, I just felt a lot more at peace. You know, at this point in my career, it's not really about me anymore. If that makes any sense, that it's more about like bringing these experiences and these opportunities to these kids. And this team that I had was, like I said, they really all bought in. There's a bunch of high academic kids that are going to play at some good D3 schools. And it was just, everything just kind of came together in the tournament.
Well, we wish your wife the very best. Hope she's doing well. And, you know, it's funny, Steve, it's funny. I was thinking about this week. I have memories of you covering your post-game interviews in Swampscott. And there, of course, was your wife and your two very young daughters, who are probably not very young anymore, but at the time. But it is a memory that I just remember that you guys were, they were always there. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's funny, Bill. I remember, thinking about, speaking with you today. I mean, you covered me in high school 35 years ago. So
I know.
So we're both getting older, and the work that you guys have done during the course of that time. I know you've been recognized by the Coaches Association for your work, but it's I think giving kids exposure and making these experiences for each and every kid special is what's great about high school football, because people are interested in it, and for some kids, it's a one-time, 3-month experience in the spotlight. And, for every one of those kids, you want to make that experience as positive and as learning-based as you can, so that they walk away with some understanding of the lessons that the game teaches, and they can take that with them.
Yeah. Steve, I can't have you on here, and because I know you mentioned the Coaches Association. You're very active with that group and about discussing options to the current playoff system, of course, options to the previous playoff system. So just for our listeners, currently now, you had 4 playoff games, including that Super Bowl, so you have to win 4 playoff games to win the state title. We've talked about the role of Thanksgiving or the lack of role of Thanksgiving, but what is your latest thinking? Share with our listeners now your latest thinking on a postseason plan, because we've talked about this in the past, but I know there was some buzz at Gillette this past week about postseason. I didn't hear a lot, though, but I know it's front and center. So what's the latest, and what can you share with us about some other ideas?
Okay, so here's what's happening. The Coaches Association, and I've been working on this for 15 years, since 2000, let's say 14 years, since 2009. The idea has always been to have a true state champion. We've made some gains with, getting the divisions aligned by state. And the current format has definitely improved. The problem is that we've put too much emphasis on the postseason. And coaches are telling us via surveys that, the consolation games are really killing the smaller programs. And not everybody in the state of Massachusetts has the ability to field a team that's going to be a state-caliber contender. Obviously, in the North Shore, St. John's Prep is going to do that almost every year because of the coaching and the short volume and the resources that they have. Obviously this year, Salem breaks through and has a fantastic season and gets there. And, you've had Swampscott there, you've had St. Mary's there, you've had Bishop Fenwick there, and others, and obviously Gloucester in their heyday, and, to get that far. But the point that we're trying to make is the regular season needs to be complete. And consolation games are killing the smaller programs. The inner city, particularly, in the smaller schools, when we get to November and kids aren't in the tournament, they're leaving the programs. And the inner city, for example, used to have 12 schools in Boston, and we're now down to 7. And the state as a whole went from 313 schools playing football in 2012 down to this year to 273. And you saw that in the North Shore with Georgetown having to co-op with Pawtucket. So the point of this plan is, let's play 10 or 11 games and end on Thanksgiving. Let's let league games be at the end of the year. Let schools schedule a couple of more non-conference games. It will make the power rating more accurate. It will allow you to schedule to the caliber of your program. And then take the top eight. Balance the division so there's no more than 40 in the division. And take the top eight and play the Connecticut format, which is the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, the Sunday following, and then the following Saturday. You know, Connecticut state championships are going to be this Saturday. They've had tremendous success with it. I believe it's their 13th year now running this model. They've actually added two divisions last year. So they have six divisions now in Connecticut. And Connecticut's about half the size of Massachusetts when it comes to football schools. So we're in line with what they're doing. You know, and obviously the football committee approved the plan enough to, the idea was to take it to the tournament management, which we did on Thursday morning, and then take and form a subcommittee, is what we're looking to do with TMC, and discuss the best way to do this. Now, there are some natural diehards and people who are against changing the calendar, and there are really, the major hang-up is, one, how do you handle the beginning of the winter season? Do you not change the date and these kids miss 2 weeks? If they make it to the final game, that would be 16 schools. About 3.5% of the schools that play a winter sport. Do you push the start date of games back a week? Right now it's a 10-day preseason in the winter. Do you make it 15 days and let those coaches begin formulating their teams and those kids trying out while this is going on? Or do you push the whole season back a week and continue with a 10-day preseason? Though that's not our call to make, but what we do want in football is kids to experience, and this is written in the MI handbook, that the tournaments should not interfere with the regular season. And if playing consolation games and going into a bigger tournament was such a great idea, then why aren't we doing it in all the other sports? And that's kind of our point. Like, hey, there's a format to include Thanksgiving and make it super important. I can give you Braintree as an example. They came into our game this year with six wins on a two-game win streak, and it was their Super Bowl. And we didn't show up emotionally, and they did, and they were jazzed to play us, and they ruined my day. I mean, I was furious with how we played. But more importantly, it gave those kids motivation, even though they weren't going to the postseason, and they were out. And every sport ends, you know, with that last day to qualify. And football doesn't. So there's a lot of data. There's a lot of MIA statistics. There's also been a very low percentage of teams qualifying that win in the bottom 9 through 16 seeds in the first round. And that's the second argument that people have. They're like, well, I want my school to have a chance to get in the tournament. And I understand that. In a perfect world, I'd be fine with 16 getting in. But to put those 16 or that 23% of schools into the tournament, you're telling the other 77% of schools, oh, sorry, you have to play a consolation game if we can match you up with somebody. And you might have to drive somewhere that you don't have a relationship with that school. And maybe nobody goes and nobody covers the game, but you can play a game. You know, it's a system that really hasn't worked that well. And the argument is, well, people still deserve a chance. Well, we're not serving the majority. It's educational athletics. We're not, you know, deciding on Florida State being out at 13-0. We're trying to provide experience and education for kids. And what we're telling these kids basically is, yeah, your games aren't that important. We'll tell you who you play Sunday night, and good luck.
Steve, are you? Do you hear what is the data from the coaches overall on Thanksgiving? Because it seems to me, for case in point, Zavarian plays the prep on Thanksgiving, then they play them again in a Super Bowl. What does that do? Does it devalue Thanksgiving? I'm thinking it does. That's just my take. But what are other coaches, what are they saying about kind of, I would call it the devaluation of Thanksgiving football for whatever reason? Your case in point, the Braintree-Milton game, perfect example. But what you know, in a way, I think, but what are you hearing from coaches on that? Winning coaches, losing coaches?
Well, there's several factors. Obviously, Thanksgiving is important to everybody. But when the game doesn't matter to you, and particularly when you're a smaller school, I know Carver and Hanover sat their guys this year because they didn't want to suffer an injury. We had four players get banged up in our game in the first four plays this year. And one of them, they all played in the Super Bowl, but one of them was not 100% by any stretch. And I think the game's important. You want it to be important. I think you want it to have an influence on the seeding. You know, St. John's Prep and Zavarian are two of the strongest programs in the state. And the fact that those opponent values weren't averaged into their power rating before the seeding is also unique, too. That, you know, in every other sport, your schedule is complete. You know, they were playing for the Catholic Conference title, and it didn't matter if you won or lost because both of them were already advanced into the Super Bowl. So, you know, there's all those factors, and it would be a lot better from a coaching standpoint and a mental standpoint for the kids if the result of the game factored into the seeding. Because then you don't know if you're going to play the other team again in the tournament. You know, I mean, did Brian St. Pierre hold back anything on Thanksgiving that he thought would be effective and he'd used in the Super Bowl? I don't know. But I know it was a great game. I know the Super Bowl was a very competitive game. They're two class programs. And, you know, obviously the Catholic Conference, along with, you know, Springfield Central, have dominated Division I tournament in the current format. But should that mean that, you know, Framingham and Natick don't get the value of playing with an opportunity to get in the tournament on Thanksgiving? Like, I just think we can do better. It's a small change. And we proved in the COVID situation that the MIAA could change the calendars and could make adjustments, which improved and provided experience for student athletes. And that's, you know, isn't that the goal of educational athletics?
Yeah, I agree. The other thing too, Steve, is if you look at Thanksgiving, you're with it all being disposed before, ahead of time. No matter what the situation is, using your playoff system that you've just described to us, Thanksgiving means something. It could mean a team. If they win Thanksgiving, they qualify for the postseason or don't qualify for the postseason. Right. And if I'm the opponent and I'm not going to qualify, I still want to beat those guys, just like Braintree wanted to beat you on Thanksgiving in Milton.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It just seems to a no-brainer to bring Thanksgiving back into it in the way you're describing. I would like to see it myself. I mean, I get it. Football season's long, but what's one more weekend for two teams, basically?
Right. And again, it's not a team that's 3-5 or 4-4. It's, you know, now we're talking about a 10 or 11 game, you know, collection of work that's going to come up with a power rating. And obviously we could talk about the power ratings and they're looking at adding, you know, tweaks to that. But, you know, we need a longer regular season for all the kids, but also for, like, you know, are we going to break up the GBL because nobody in the GBL has the power rating that Everett has and Everett can't get in the tournament at 7-1? Is Everett going to have to leave and go independent so their football program can schedule more competitive program? Like, is the Hockomock Conference going to get 6 or 7 teams in the tournament every year because of the caliber of play that they have. You know, there are some things that will be improved, and it will help provide a better experience for all these kids. And I think, you know, this playoff format is based more upon the value of the regular season in the experience of all the kids that play, and not just the elite ones.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I know you've given us a lot of time, so I don't want to hold you much longer, but is there anything else you want to share about the about your thoughts on the playoffs? And even share with us, what is the timeline moving forward for making any, for continuing discussions or even possibly making changes?
All right, so let's start with the timeline. The 2024 season is going to be the same format as it was this year, so that's not going to change. We're looking, this is for 2025, and that's why we're really looking to push discussion while the football committee backed this, you know, this idea of having a joint committee with TMC, because obviously this is something that would probably need to be voted on by the membership. It would be a major change for 25. But I mean, a lot of the data points that this is the right way to go. You know, And the only other thing, Bill, I can say is to all the North Shore coaches that are listening, get your association award nominations in and pay your dues, you know, because this is now the time of year where we're going to be looking to select, you know, the All-State Super 26 team, the All-State Divisional teams, you know, the unsung heroes, you know, the assistant coaches that do so much with their programs. You know, the association works really hard. It's probably about 25 guys on the executive board that donate so much of their time to build and grow and recognize the achievement of the men and young men that are in this game, including the media. And, you know, we're so appreciative for the work that you do with Rick, and obviously there are different groups across the state that just donate so much of their time to promote, you know, high school football and the experience that these kids are, you know, are living their dreams out there and having a blast. So thank you.
Hey, one last question. Where do the coaches stand? I mean, you got the pulse on things. I mean, are the coaches in favor of this proposal?
Most are. We do surveys every year, and we'll have one going out shortly. Most are definitely in favor of this. You know, it's one of those things where it does become kind of a personal answer. You know, I'll give you an example. For a St. John's Prep or a Xaverian, you know, there aren't a lot of programs in the state that want to play them. So finding, you know, 10 or 11 games, but if you ask Brian, if he had to find three more games, he'd probably be like ripping his hair out.
Mm.
But for, you know, let's just say Swampscott, for example, if they could go out, you know, if they're having a, you know, a good year or a bad year or whatever Peter Bush expects, and he could go out and schedule some early competitive games, you know, maybe they go play Holliston, maybe they go and play at Duxbury, or better yet, maybe they come to Milton, you know, like maybe that helps him build a better resume and a power rating to get into the postseason in 25 and make a run at another state championship.
Yeah. Well, Steve, thanks so much. We really appreciate your insights and on all of this and sharing that information with our listeners. And to you, the team, your coaching staff in Milton, congrats on the Super Bowl, the D3 title. And again, thanks for your time and congrats to everybody.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate all the work you guys do, and thanks for having me on.
All right. They formerly from the North Shore, Steve Dombowski with us, head football coach at Milton High School, here on MSONewsports.com.